You've heard of Grammarly, and you might think it's a fancy spell check, but people on your team have been using it and loving it for years, because it does way more than you realise. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that works seamlessly across apps and websites and can write an instant first draft in a few clicks, not a few hours. When every word your team writes is clear, concise, and on brand, companies can save 19 days per employee per year. Learn what better writing can do for your company at Grammarly.com. Grammarly. Easier said, done.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier, too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm indeed Caroline Hyde. We're at Bloomberg's world headquarters in New York at Ludlow. He's live in Cupertino, California, because it is Apple's WWDC. This is Bloomberg Technology. Coming up, full coverage of that very event as Apple prepares to debut its long-awaited mixed reality headset. And as the company nears, of course, a $3 trillion market cap. Much more ahead. Plus, we'll get perspective on virtual and augmented reality gaming in today's Venture Capital Spotlight. That's with Amber Atherton of Patron. And Twitter, the U.S. ad sales plunging, we understand. We'll discuss the woes facing the incoming CEO, Linda Yaccarina. It's her first day on the job. That's as the company forecasts small declines ahead. All that and so much more. First, let's check in on these markets because, well, is still technology managing to power through some of the worries when it comes to the macro front? We've got the services data showing actually some weakness there. Maybe that's actually pulling back some of the yields that we see on the two-year yield. Maybe people were thinking the Fed really can't hike into this sort of environment quite to the anticipation they'd previously done. But notable outperformance of technology on top. We'll dig into some of the micro movers, but NASDAQ up almost half a percentage point. Not so, though, for Bitcoin. Crypto on the downside, this risk asset not liking some of the mood music around Binance, of course, biggest exchange worldwide for crypto. They see the SEC ire there, the SEC suing both Binance and indeed its founder, CZ, were off by 4.5%, so accelerating some of that sell-off on the back of that news. Let's move on to some of the key micro movers, though, because, look, we have got some buoyancy, certainly in Tesla stock. We've just been looking all about things SpaceX, but Elon's other play up 1.7%. Some of the Chinese data, the car sales, looking at growth month on month and significant growth year on year after we see that Shanghai Gigafactory managing to come out post-COVID. Meta actually on the upside, getting some rates from Oppenheimer, for example, saying big bet for AI. They see Meta outperforming. And though the chip stocks are lagging today, we're seeing the stocks currently off by 1.2%. So the Philadelphia Semiconductor Index on the downside. Basically, last time I checked, every single chip name apart from AMD was on the downside, as we just see Citigroup going negative on that particular outlook. But let's look at what really we are powering in terms of the outperformance in tech today. It's got to be Apple. Look at its current market cap, $2.9 trillion, closing in on that $3 trillion. Once we saw it just hit, but it never closed at that number back in 2022. And we see it just reprise up 40% on the year to date for this particular stock. And of course, we want to go out to Apple's Worldwide Developers Conference, or WWDC as it's known, kicking off, running through June 9th. And look, tech giant's long-awaited mixed reality headset is what we're all focused on. And Ed, you're on the ground. Give us the latest. What's it feel like? What's the sense like? What's the goodie bag like?
It feels like the biggest event for Apple in a decade, right? Mark Gurman has set out what we expect through his Bloomberg News reporting. A mixed reality headset, $3,000 price point, 16 gigabyte RAM memory, carbon fiber, aluminum, glass. The question for this mixed VR AR headset is, what is the slate of content? What are the apps that are ready to go? Because the price point's interesting, not even high enough for Apple to make high margin, but low enough to not price them out of the market. Car, I find this dynamic so interesting. Go back to 2014 when they unveiled the Apple Watch in September that year. This feels like the biggest move into a new category since that point, a historic moment for Apple.
Yeah, let's look at all things Apple. Let's look at all things with your guest as well, Ed, because, I mean, you're just saying, really, this is a price point that's going to be high. This is sales that actually isn't about margin, isn't about scale, but it's about reinventing what we think of as virtual reality, as AR as well. And you've got the perfect guest.
Yeah, you asked me what it's like on the ground. Well, what it's like is seeing those familiar faces, the veterans of these Apple events, and one of them is Carolina Milanese, principal analyst at Creative Strategies. You heard my preamble about the mixed reality headset. What is this moment in Apple's history for you?
I totally agree with you that it's the big moment for Tim Cook. It's the big announcement of a new era, a new market, building though of everything that he has done for the company since he took over the leadership, right? So I think we are going to look at opportunity in enterprise as well as opportunity, more opportunity in content. Those are, in my opinion, the two areas where the VR, AR, mixed reality headset is going to play.
The specifications, $3,000 reported by Bloomberg News, 16 gigabyte RAM memory. You look at the materials that are used to make it. But it really seems like the big question is what you can actually use it to do.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly the right question to ask. Right now, to be honest with you, it doesn't really matter in terms of you're looking at early adopters that will buy to figure out what you're going to do with it, even if it's $3,000. You're looking at developers that are looking at the opportunity to expand their iOS and macOS and iPadOS market. And then you're going to look at time before the mass market is going to be ready for it. So I think there's opportunity to create that ecosystem in the same way as Apple. You talked about watch, but I think a good comparison is also the iPad, where at the beginning you were using iOS apps and then developers came with dedicated app. I wonder if we're going to see a similar thing here.
I spent the morning going through all the data from 2022 for augmented reality and VR headsets, 300,000 globally in augmented, less than 8 million for VR. How much of a catalyst will Apple's move be for what is a young product segment?
Everybody's going to come, right? It's the classic build it and they will come. Apple has done that time and time again, right? Coming into a market that hasn't quite taken off yet, or it was, but then it stalled, and so they're able to re-energize that. I think from a developer perspective, there's no question that this offers a huge opportunity, and others will come to the market and see what is available.
Carolina, meanwhile, the rest of the market is just completely focused on artificial intelligence, it feels like. And there's a mixed viewpoint here from analysts that we're getting. Some, like Webb Bush, think we're going to hear a lot about AI from Apple today. Others, well, our own Mark Gurman, saying this is not the time or place, and actually wait for it in a year or so. What do you make of Apple's AI play?
I think that Apple has been talking about AI for a long time, but in a different way. First it was Siri, and then the talk around Siri went away, and it became more about on-device machine learning, which is still part of AI, is what still you need for AI. But Apple is in a different place compared to, say, a Google or a Microsoft, because they don't own their own cloud. And so they are dependent on others to run big models. So they need to bring us back to what is the value of artificial intelligence on my device. Mm. And linked to that is the value of artificial intelligence to me as a user. And there's, I would argue, no one else that knows their users as much as Apple does.
To that end, anything that you're excited about from what else will be unveiled today? We know that they'll probably be having an update to the financial offerings, and it feels as though it's not a particularly pleasant place to be right now if you're a fintech and seeing just how much more Apple can own that space. What are you thinking about in terms of the health area? What excites you?
Obviously this is the developer conference, so I'm really interested in seeing what other enhancements all the platform, from watch to iPad to iOS and Mac, will bring. But we also know that there's likely to be some new Macs, and I think when I think about that in particular is the opportunity that Apple is continuing to have in an enterprise environment. Apple never talks about the enterprise business. It's always a consumer company, but the reality is that they're gaining enormous share in enterprise, and if they are bringing to market a MacBook Air 15-inch at an aggressive price point, then that share will grow strategically for them.
The developers love WWDC. It is for them. Watch OS 10, iOS 17, software. What are you most excited about there?
I don't expect big things. I continue to expect personalized care, if you like, the ability of really pushing, especially the phone and the watch, to be more of a health and security device. We saw last year some features. Those are the kind of things that I'm expecting. And then it'd be interesting to see what we see around messaging and FaceTime, whether, you know, this little fight with Android and RCS will end this time around or not.
Were you at Google I.O.?
I was not. I watched it from afar.
Okay, so the reason I bring that up is at Google I.O. they reference this fight in a sort of hint way. Go back to the headset. I'm sorry, we have to. Mixed reality.
Totally.
But those developers in the audience, what is it that they'll want to hear? Because ultimately, we've reported at Bloomberg that actually the kind of core suite of apps on iPhone and iPad will be available on the mixed reality headset, but they will develop its next generation functionality.
Yeah, I think for the developers, it's all about the tools, right? Is how easy is Apple going to make it for them to take those apps that are already available, just, you know, regularly ported onto the, to make them better and to make other opportunity for them to monetize. You know, how much richer is that experience going to be for their apps that allow them to monetize more from the app?
Bloomberg is reporting that Apple hopes to sell 900,000 units of the mixed reality headset in year one. What's your reaction to that? Low, high?
It's hard to tell before seeing the headset and see what the value is. I think a lot of it will depend on how many different things can you do with it. From a, not just the app perspective, but from a content perspective, we've seen Apple really doubling down on sport.
I do think that is interesting, isn't it? Where this makes the most sense. Ed's great reporting, much has been said about sort of the Quest 3 that's just been coming on the market. We understand it's going to be about $500 versus the $3,000 price point that we're getting from Apple. But really where the penetration needs to be felt is in the office, productivity, not just sort of gaming and health. Is this going to be a productivity kind of a use case immediately, or is this ultimately just showing off that it's an aspirational good and you've got it?
I do think that there's an angle that is productivity related. We obviously see Microsoft play with HoloLens, but then walk away from it. So there's definitely opportunity there. And that's why I was talking about the Mac earlier, that Apple is now creating that space for them in business to be taken seriously.
I was looking at the history of WWDC. It wasn't called it then, but 1983 at a hotel in San Mateo was the first kind of developers conference. What does this event mean to you? When you sit there in the audience, it's pre-recorded, but you listen to it. Share with us your experiences and what you get from it.
I always remember my first one, which was after the iPhone in 2007. And it was a Moscone. And I came out asking if the coffee was spiked in the morning, because the buzz that you feel is honestly something that I always compare only to Nokia events. I date myself here.
R.I.P. Yeah.
Back when Nokia was the leader in smartphone business. There's nothing else quite like it.
Absolutely fascinating when it comes to all things Ed. Nokia, what an old school viewpoint to be bringing. But as you said, RIP. And thanks so much. Carolina Milanese as well, President and Principal Analyst over at Creative Strategies. Apple touching that record high today, nearing a $3 trillion market capitalization. It's all ahead of the WWDC event that's kicking off in but an hour or so's time. Tech, AI stocks, of course, have been your main driver for the markets this year. Will they continue to be? Nancy Doe's with us, CEO and financial advisor at Opus Advice First, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. Always great having you with us, Nancy. And look, we sort of continue to run on fumes here. Are the fumes reality for you when it comes to AI, or indeed big tech being a safe harbor, but also a growth play as well?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm always very excited about the technology sector. Even when it was tanking last year, I kept saying what a great opportunity it is, especially if you're in it for the longer term, of course, because the day-to-day swings can be a little daunting. But of course, you know, technology is the way of the world, and there's more of it coming, especially with AI, where we're going to have another transformation of our lives and the entire world. So it is very exciting indeed. Mm. Just have to have a little bit more information. There's a lot of unknowns at this time.
There are, and it means therefore for some like Citi saying this has gone too far, we're likely to now see a downward trajectory perhaps as these AI, artificial intelligence headlines become steeped within business models. Do you think we've run up too far for what ultimately gets painted as the clear picture of what AI does to these companies?
Well, you know, when it comes to buying stocks, the math has to rule. And clearly the earnings are just not living up to the valuations at this time. And unfortunately, that's what counts when you're buying stocks. And so, yes, there's a little bit too much excitement going on here. And that will account for a great deal of ups and downs and significant volatility. I mean, when you have eye-popping returns of over 100% year to date, and then you look at last year and down 50%, those are pretty big swings, and an investor would have to have pretty strong stomach lining to be able to put up with that.
I mean, I'm just looking at the forward-looking, the price to forward earnings on Apple, currently trading at in excess of 30 times. This is a company that's going to post actually a decline in revenue for this fiscal year. Is, though, a company that has just got that sheer market weighting? Can you fight against what have been sort of, well, many are turning them sort of the Super 7 or the Magnificent 7 key stocks that have just driven the outperformance across the S&P and indeed, of course, the Nasdaq this year?
Well, we're still in the business of meeting clients' long-term goals, so we tend to take a little more prudent approach and maybe buy companies that engage in AI and all of the excitement, but not necessarily depend solely on that revenue. They have to be more diversified and have earnings and revenue from other sources as well. I think that's probably the most prudent way to enter this arena. But for the most part, we're going to be a bit more wait and see, because we still, quite frankly, don't know the good, the bad, and the ugly of what AI has to give to us or bring to us in the next few years.
And what, therefore, of the good, the bad, the ugly when it comes to macro picture as well? Today we see services weakening. Overall, we're worried about whether the Federal Reserve hikes interest rates further, actually is forced to start cutting them. How does that guide you as to whether technology as a sector is a place you want to be?
Well, I do believe that the Fed will pause, just as Mr. Powell indicated, and I don't believe there will be any rate cuts, at least not anytime soon, and certainly not this year. But technology is a sector that is here to stay. I mean, this is clearly something that we live with, and it is involved in every aspect of our lives, so it's not going anywhere. And in fact, it's going to evolve even more and faster. So it certainly is the longer-term outlook. But again, longer-term is the emphasis because the day-to-day swings can be extremely volatile, and it's not for the faint at heart. Mm. You do have to have it in a longer-term perspective.
And across asset, are you thinking long or getting into technology stocks that, of course, are diversified, or is it more about the bond market, different parts of their overall capital structure? Where do you think is the right place to be allocating at this moment?
Well, for the longer term, certainly technology stocks are the entire tech sector will be terrific. However, shorter term, we are taking a much more defensive approach and going on the fixed income side or the structured note side. And I think that can create a little bit of an offset for all of that up and down, the daily up and down and the crazes and then the downfalls.
And to that point, this is a global narrative. We've seen AI sort of take wind, whether it's in Asian names or whether it's being traded here in the United States, even some European chip stocks getting caught up in it. But do you allocate primarily to the United States, Nancy? Do you think about diversification globally?
At this time, we have stuck mostly with U.S. We have not ventured into outside of the U.S. too much as of yet. I don't believe the valuations there are going to be as profitable as U.S. There's many, many more problems outside the U.S. than what we have here. And also, the currency exchange plays a very big part of it still, unfortunately. And when the dollar is still this strong, it's very hard to bring alpha into the portfolio of investors.
How many of your private wealth clients are still interested in crypto?
Well, all of them are. They all are. They all ask questions about it, but I'm fascinated by how little they actually know about it. Mm. It's fascinating. And I think every new craze or every new headline du jour really indicates that how little people actually know about what everybody's jumping into. And that's pretty fearful, in my opinion. We have to be very fearful when that happens.
Nancy, great to have some time with you. Nancy Dowd of Ameriprise. We thank you. Meanwhile, coming up, look, we're going to be discussing the steps that Microsoft is currently taking to get through its $69 billion takeover of Activision Blizzard. That's in Talking Tech. But we just talked about it with Nancy. Let's get back to it. Crypto. What don't we know? What do we know? Well, we do understand that the US SEC is filing charges against Binance. That's certainly leading perhaps some of the negative feeling and sentiment around Bitcoin, the OG, today. We're currently off by 5.25%, let's call it, for Bitcoin at the moment. Wall Street's main regulator accusing Binance and indeed its chief executive officer, that's CZ, of breaking U.S. securities rules. It's a major escalation in those legal woes that continue to face what is the global biggest crypto exchange. This is Bloomberg.
What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop, customer satisfaction scores would rise, and everyone would be more productive. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication. Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks. Like generating an instant first draft in your company voice, or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly, easier said, done.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline, it's teamwork, and it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's Stifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Time now for Talking Tech. First up, India's Baidu's is looking to IPO its tutoring unit next year as the education technology company is seeking to shore up much-needed cash. The initial public offering of the unit is set to take place in the middle of next year, Baidu said Monday in a statement. Meanwhile, India's most valuable startup, that's what it is planning to make a quarterly interest payment of about $40 million on a loan that has really been at the center of the firm's financial troubles. Meanwhile, let's look abroad and look at Beijing's ban on Micron. It continues to attract calls for retaliation from Washington. GOP lawmakers have asked Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo to counter China's ban by sanctioning a Chinese semiconductor company, Changxin Memory. The lawmakers are also urging Raimondo to work with Tokyo and Seoul to ensure that they don't take advantage of the market share left by China's Micron blockade. Plus, let's look at an update in Microsoft's $69 billion takeover Activision Blizzard. Microsoft's president, Brad Smith, he's actually going to be meeting with UK Chancellor Jeremy Hunt, that's next week, to really voice his frustration over the decision by Britain's competition regulator to block that takeover. Smith is expected to point to the benefits of the acquisition, for example, for gamers, the pushback against the move to block the industry's largest merger, and a decision that will kind of soon play out in the special UK antitrust court. Welcome back to Bloomberg Technology. I'm Caroline Hyde in New York. We want to get a quick check on these markets on the important day of WWDC. The Nasdaq trades higher because Apple pushes on higher, up 0.7%. The Nasdaq 100, the big tech juggernaut, is what I focus in on. Even as we see perhaps some muted trading in the rest of the day, in the rest of the benchmarks, we're worried more about some of the macro picture coming in terms of services on the decline. We saw New York crude actually up 1.5%. Interesting moves coming from OPEC Plus, actually a cut to production from Saudi Arabia. Up goes oil, but pulling off of those highs as well. Bitcoin under pressure after we see the SEC take steps against CZ, the founder of Binance, and indeed against Binance itself. We're off by 5%. Just the moon music changing on that particular risk asset. Let's move on and look at some of the individual movers, though. So those sort of forever chemicals that were so affecting 3M, we understand there's going to be a postponement to that particular trial. Maybe some sort of deal can be struck, a global deal, on how to basically settle on what is these forever chemicals, a concern that it's indeed affecting water supplies, down 2.6% from 3M. But Palo Alto Networks managing to power ahead on the day. Why? Because they're getting included in the S&P 500. So we're up almost 5%, we understanding, on the change in those benchmarks. But as we say, today is a notable day because it is WWDC, all about developers, all about Apple, all about, well, the changing of the guard is to a new kind of product. We're up almost 2% on Apple. We're near $2.9 trillion, basically, in terms of market capitalization. Record high in the share price. Ed, can we hold on to it? You're in Cupertino and it feels as though the energy is there. The excitement must be brewing.
Yeah, it depends if we get what we're expecting, a $3,000 mixed reality headset mix, because outward-facing cameras give us the augmented reality functionality through video feed, through next-generation screen giving us the virtual reality component, a mix of carbon fiber, aluminum, and glass, 16 gigabytes of memory. Mark Gurman of Bloomberg News is reporting it's going to be able to carry the core suite of apps that you and I know from iOS on iPhone and iPad. What's really interesting, though, the question is on the killer app. What is going to be that big thing that justifies a $3,000 price point of functionality? Interesting, the work that Mark's reported around fitness and tech. You and I, big health tech users. Can you imagine working out, Caro, using a mixed reality headset?
And that's the point, is the stumbling blocks that basically these headsets have had is that they kind of make you feel a bit sick. They're just too heavy. It's why, in many ways, this has been delayed. And a different vision from what Tim Cook first had for the product, which was going to be far lighter weight, far easier to wear throughout the day.
Well, what's really interesting is that we think that this mixed reality headset will be akin to something like ski goggles, right? But it means there's no space for glasses wearers like myself. I got my spare contact lenses in my bag just in case. But, you know, I think the other big question is, let's remember what Apple WWDC is, right? Worldwide Developers Conference. Big emphasis on software. A big part of that audience will be building the next generation of functionality for mixed reality headsets. This one, but also the more affordable future generations, going to get some interesting updates on OS as well, not just on Mac and iOS, but watchOS 10 is something we think is coming, according to Mark Gurman's reporting.
Yeah, still a lot to be talked about, particularly the Macs as well. We think are going to be a lot of time dedicated there. We're pleased to have Ed joining us right now. We are so global. I'm here in New York. You're there in, well, Cupertino, California. And right now, Ray Wong is with us. He's joining the conversation, who sat there in Taipei late at night joining us, principal analyst and founder of Constellation Research. You got a $230 price target, I believe, on Apple. You feel, is VR, AR, is this an area that Apple's just going to dominate and make it, well, the product and the ecosystem we've all been waiting for?
You know, we've actually waited almost 12 to 13 years for this. It started with the first acquisition of Mateo by Apple, which was one of the leaders in augmented reality and virtual reality. And so when you read into the Code New Worlds theme, they've been cryptic about the future worlds in a mixed reality world. And this is probably the start of what we're going to see, that move from 2D to 3D, the move from typing to gesture, gestures and eye tracking. It's going to actually change where we go, but we're still at the very beginning. But it's a big market cap that we're looking at here. We're looking at about $451 billion by 2030 with a CAGR of 37.2%. That's about to head there. But the real thing is, how do we take device plus content plus distribution networks to get there? And that's where Apple will have the magic sauce.
Ray, Bloomberg's reporting that Apple intends to sell 900,000 units of the mixed reality headset in year one. What does that tell you about their confidence for uptake and demand at that price point?
I think that's a price point that's not for the mass market, but a price point that's designed for the experts, the developers and the content creators that are dying to get their hands on something to make this metaverse world work and make that move from mixed reality, augmented reality, to where they can get to a point where we can actually see apps for both the B2B market and the B2C market. And I think that's what they're counting on. But that number itself, 900,000, is still a pretty big number, which means that they've gotten their manufacturing capacity to be able to do that. So I'm going to be curious to see how they put this all together.
Yeah, I mean, you're sat there in Taipei at the moment. Is this a supply chain question that has to depend on China at the moment?
Actually, it's a supply chain question that's going to happen on multiple forces for where you actually get the glass, the lead, all the stuff here. Taipei, Taiwan, as you know, is one of the leaders in providing supplies to Apple from a various number of companies, from Foxconn downline to the L2, L3 suppliers. And having conversations with them over the past few weeks and over the weekend, it sounds like the supply chains are getting ready to ramp up for a very, very different type of approach.
Yeah, I really think that we're focusing in on supply chain. We're focusing in on actually, Ed, as well, when this becomes available. We're going to be talking about it, hearing a price point,
right.
But when will it go on sale?
Yeah, I mean, you and I had that Twitter Spaces Friday with Mark Gurman, right? And that was such a big question for so much of the audience. What Bloomberg's reported is that, A, this is a product that's been delayed several times. Apple had hoped to unveil it much sooner. Could we see this in December, for example, and what the roadmap is for shipping? I find Ray's answer on 900,000 being good evidence that they've got their supply chain together really interesting. My question to you, Ray, is how quickly do they need to move on to a lower price point model in order to give this segment some momentum?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I believe that's going to be something in the next 12 to 18 months, right? You've got to get the content in place. You've got to get the developers imagining what's next. And they've got to get another iteration to what their new operating system is for whatever this headset will be called. And so whatever that OS is going to be is really how we're going to have, figure out where we get to in terms of the right type of content, the right mix, the right type of use cases. I believe they've got a sense of what those use cases and scenarios are, both on the enterprise side as well as on the consumer side. And that's what makes this exciting. And of course, that's what makes WWDC exciting.
Ray, I reported earlier this year that the real reason Meta cut prices on Quest Pro was because the enterprise demand just wasn't there. There was no appetite to bring a higher end headset into the workspace. Do you think Apple can crack that problem?
I definitely think so. And I think the use cases around field service have been important. I think the use cases around training, the use cases around B2B interviews, the use cases that are happening around helping people onboard, those are all real use cases. But at the price point that Meta was putting it at and the lack of content and the lack of developer interest, I think that was the challenge. And I think that's where Apple may crack this, especially when they talk about coding new worlds. I think you'll also see the updates when we look at ARKit 7 and RealityKit 2, they're going to show some of those updates that actually will help you understand how they're evolving. And of course, if you think about this as the unifying force of bringing all of Apple's OSs together, this could be the first step where we see iOS, iPadOS, tvOS, watchOS maybe come together. And I think that would be the interesting development to see the software platforms all unify against this new medium.
Kind of a power of the ecosystem ultimately, Ray. And I'm interested in your take of what is an elephant in the room, because every other company is talking about it. Every earnings call and statement had it. Artificial intelligence. Do you think Apple's going to go there, talk it much? Because ultimately, it's sort of already thought that the market understood its power in that area, in that arena.
Well, living in Cupertino, California, I can tell you that they are definitely wrapping up on AI/ML team members. They've been definitely wrapping up on AI engineers, but this has been going on for the last 5 years. So for Apple, AI isn't like, oh, cool, shiny new object, you know? It's more like AI is embedded in almost everything we do. And by the way, here are the applications that makes your life better. And I think that's the difference between how Apple talks about AI versus this little weird battle between Microsoft and Google trying to outdo each other on the AI wars.
Little weird battle that we love to talk about. Ray Wong, great to have some time with you. Thanks for staying up late. Principal Analyst and Founder at Constellation Research. And really just, Ed, keep on banging that drum over there in Cupertino, California. He's going to be much more coming up from him any moment. Meanwhile, coming up, we've got some interesting conversations we're having with Amber Atherton, Ed, partner at Patron, about the fund's broader thesis for the future of gaming. This is Bloomberg.
What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop, customer satisfaction scores would rise, and everyone would be more productive. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication. Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks, like generating an instant first draft in your company voice or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly. Easier said, done.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Time now for our VC Spotlight. From education to shopping, games. Apparently they're going to shape the next internet. That's what the early stage venture capital firm Patron believes as it invests in what it calls a broader gaming thesis. Joining us now from San Francisco is Amber Atherton, partner at Patron, also out with a book titled The Rise of Virtual Communities. Amber, on a day where we look across to Cupertino, we look across to Apple and the making of maybe VR, AR to the masses, how much does virtual reality, augmented reality, bring to bear your future analysis and thesis on gaming?
Well, I think it's great that Apple is getting into the game. You know, they are the best when it comes to computing hardware. So for gaming, this could be a Palm Pilot to iPhone moment. You know, for gaming, the iPhone was a critical catalyst for that industry. So I think it's going to be really exciting to see what developers do with this new device and, you know, what venture outcomes and opportunities could be there.
Ultimately, you think about the gamification of everything. So how much is VR, AR going to end up being the way in which we work? How much does that become gamified? How much does our finances become gamified? I mean, already you're thinking about the gamification of many of these sorts of areas.
Yeah, I mean, so at Patron, we invest in what we call the spectrum of play. So on one end, you know, that's actual game studios, and then on the other end, that's game-like experiences. For example, Kudos, which is a smart wallet, which is gamifying the shopping experience, or Tonic, which is helping musicians practice in a more game-like way with a virtual studio, with avatars. So I think if Apple can solve the form function problems, and honestly, just the comfort of having a device on for that long, there are going to be a lot of of opportunities for this generation to be continuing to live and play in virtual worlds. I mean, you can't forget that half of U.S. kids play Roblox every single day. So I think for a new generation of consumers, it's not, it doesn't feel like gaming. This is just where they hang out with their friends.
And it's interesting that when we were previously thinking about Web3 avatars, when we were thinking about gamification, many would put Meta there. Ultimately, how much does VR and AR or Web3 depend on VR, AR becoming reality or not really from your perspective?
I don't think the two are intertwined. I think that, you know, particularly what I learned in my book is that while technology evolves, some of the fundamental challenges still remain the same. So I think what we're looking at is founders who are building with, whether that is blockchain, whether it is AR, VR, whether it's AI, you know, we want sustainable businesses and founders who are going to think about the challenges alongside the opportunities.
Okay, how many of those founders are currently seeing opportunities in artificial intelligence in your world? How are you able to sort the wheat from the chaff there?
I mean, I think it is impossible to ignore. If you are a founder today, you have to embrace the fact that this is a huge landscape shift and presents a huge amount of opportunity. I think that in gameplay specifically, you know, AI for NPCs, world creation, there's so much that can accelerate the founder journey there. So we're excited about the portfolio companies that are experimenting across the board with how this will help them accelerate their roadmap and also allow players to have a more sort of interactive, personalized experience.
When you're looking to write checks and you're in seed in a very early sort of stage, sort of one person with an idea, helping them build that around that, I understand. Is it competitive out there at the moment? Are lots of checks still being written? What sort of valuations are you looking at?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think this is a great time to build. You know, when economic times are tough, some of the best companies get built. So we're seeing a lot of very, very interesting talent coming out of companies across Silicon Valley who are looking to ride this AI wave, but also just realize that where we sit as Patron is in between, you know, gaming, consumer culture, and it's so difficult to ignore that gaming has such a fundamental impact on culture broadly. So I think we're seeing a lot of exciting talent come out of, you know, bigger companies across the board who are looking to take advantage of this opportunity in the environment right now.
What's interesting, of course, about your journey is you were a founder, YC Combinator, and then came out and was what your company, Zypo, was bought by Discord. How are you thinking about the landscape of ultimately companies either being bought at an early stage or whether we can see companies that we're currently hoping, like a Discord, to eventually go public, even though you have to wait that little bit longer?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, everyone's waiting for the IPO market to pick back up, and that could be towards the end of this year. But I think, you know, M&A activity is still very, very vibrant right now. But I think, you know, the challenges with virtual worlds and online communities remain the same. You know, you're thinking about moderation. You're thinking about, you know, the tremendous scale that you need to truly monetize with ads, moderation. So I think there's still, despite technology evolving in this sort of mixed reality world, there are still fundamental challenges ahead.
Monetization, key for so many. Patron Amber Atherton, thank you very much indeed for joining us today. Look, we've been talking about it all show. What's going viral right here, right now? It's Apple's WWDC. Tim Cook, moments away from starting his keynote where we expect the launch of the company's mixed reality headset. Joining us now, the one, the only, very busy Mark Gurman. And Mark, how much detail will we actually get as to when we can put these things on our faces or when we might even splash up to $3,000?
Yeah, today is going to focus on the headset, the hardware itself, the software, demos, what it's going to be able to do. This headset is probably 4 to 7 months away from going on sale. They have not started mass production yet. They're only starting, you know, very early test production. It's still in its stage called DVT, which is a development cycle. It's not at that final hardware yet. It's still a prototype. So probably won't go on sale until December, January at the earliest. In terms of the price, it's possible they'll announce the price today. It's possible they won't announce the price today. Mm-hmm. But we believe it's going to come in the $3,000 range, give or take a few hundred dollars on either end. But the important thing today is drumming up interest, getting developers on board, showing the world what they've got here so they can move forward and get this thing to market at the end of the year, early next year.
We were just talking about monetization. and how difficult that still is in kind of online communities and social. But ultimately, what's this about monetization for Apple in launching such an expensive VR, AR? Is it about the rest of the ecosystem?
It's about the rest of the ecosystem. There's going to be plenty of content to buy for this device. There's the App Store. Obviously, they take their App Store share. The App Store is going to be a very big part of the launch itself as well. So clearly, this is a hardware and services play. Long term, I think they're going to make some pretty good money on this thing, and it is going to be probably a, you know, maybe a flop at the beginning. It's going to start very slow, but over time, it's going to turn into one of the company's most crucial products and potentially even a bridge to a future after the iPhone.
Mark Gurman, you're going to be busy all day. We thank you for spending some time with us, as always.
Thank you.
Meanwhile, well, let's also go viral in another matter. Let's look at Twitter. A New York Times report showing that ad sales at the platform slumped 59% from April to May compared to this time last year. For more, let's bring in Bloomberg's Asia Counts. And really, I thought we heard from Elon Musk that all advertisers are coming back. Doesn't look like it.
Yeah, that's what he said. But I mean, advertisers continue to be really hesitant because a lot of the challenges with the platform have not really gotten better. There's still a rise in hate speech. There's misinformation. There was the whole verification blue checkmark debacle. Elon Musk himself has made a lot of problematic tweets. And so advertisers are just really concerned about brand safety. What is my ad going to appear next to? And so it's not super surprising, but it's continuing to be a struggle for Twitter.
Probably not a delightful report for Linda Yaccarino to read on her first day at the job, right?
Not delightful at all. But I imagine she kind of had some expectations going into this. Like, she's probably aware, right? Musk has vocally said advertising revenue was down 50%. He said that at the end of March. So the struggles have been out there and they've been known. So I imagine she knew what she was coming into and just plans to use her relationships and her deep industry experience to maybe help bridge the gap.
Ultimately, we're not expecting things to change overnight. Are we expecting, though, hiring at least to be occurring, some sort of shoring up? Because they've seen some key exits, particularly around trust and safety, which it seems to me is exactly what, well, brands and advertisers are missing right now.
Yeah, you would expect Linda to bring in some people. I know she's bringing a person that used to work with her in comms from NBC Universal. I imagine that she'll be involved in hiring additional people. Musk has talked about probably needing to rehire maybe even some of the people that were let go in some of the initial rounds of cuts. So I absolutely think that they will have to do that and just sort of beef up their team in order to be able to handle some of the expectations that advertisers have around brand safety and, as you mentioned, trust and safety and what kind of content appears on the platform.
Bloomberg's Asia Counts with a breakdown on all things Twitter. We thank you so much. Well, meanwhile, that does it for this edition of Bloomberg Technology. You've got so much more to be digesting, though, of course. WWDC is about to unfold. What are you going to hear in terms of virtual reality, augmented reality? What's the price point? What's the application? What's the hearing in terms of health overall, in terms of also your finances? We've got plenty to be hearing as well in terms of operating system upgrades. And remember, the Macs are going to be front and center for many in terms of for sophisticated suite of PCs, whether you're working or playing. We think about the future of technology when it comes to Apple any moment now from Cupertino. You've got to let Ed Ludlow run into that event and be hearing what Tim Cook is going to be saying as he takes to the stage alongside many executives. Meanwhile, of course, you can go to one of Apple's products, which is Apple Podcasts, and listen to the Bloomberg Technology Podcast if you haven't managed to listen to us live. There's also Spotify and iHeart from New York, from San Francisco. Stay with us throughout the day for updates. This is Bloomberg.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal wherever you get your podcasts.
And watch on Bloomberg Originals, Bloomberg Television, or BTV+.